You weren't in lockstep, though. I mean, you know, shouting off cadence.
I'm done.
Some people might get sensitive.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commission Director. Pleasure to be here before you today. I think your agenda likely says that Donnie Martorello is introducing the team, but he's been pretty busy lately, and I told him I was going to be here anyway, so I'd cover the few minutes that he would have spent in front of you and then turn it over. We are a little ahead of schedule. We do have Malia here as well, correct? Okay. So anyway, I'm Eric Gardner. I'm the Assistant Director of the Wildlife Program and sitting in for Donnie, as I mentioned. We do have three people who are going to present today, assuming we get Malia here. But to start, we have Benjamin Maletsky to my right, who's a statewide wolf specialist, and then Dan Brinson, our conflict section manager. But before we turn it over to them, I just thought I would cover a few higher level topics, I guess, speaking about the legislative session specifically. I think you've all been made aware that we received $183,000 to conduct an EIS for wolf translocation. That was a result of some legislative discussion and initially some efforts to pass some legislation that would have perhaps directed either wolf translocation or the development of the EIS. The outcome of all of those discussions was to just push it into the budget realm and to give us the funding to do the work. So we're currently in the planning stages of figuring out exactly how we will get that done, and we will be very transparent in communicating with the commission over the next meeting or two what that timeline looks like. We have already done some of that preliminary work. We've been working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to, you know, kind of gauge their level of interest in being involved and necessary or not participation. Some of the, I guess, good news is we've heard from the service that they believe that if we were to pursue a translocation, we could do it under existing Section 6 authorities. The transition occurs with how we manage the wolves if they become wolves in the federally listed side of the state. But we expect to partner with them anyway through this process. And we do have a status report due to the state legislature, but not until the end of 2019. So we've got some time to work on that. Some other things that were also kind of handed to us, but this is also a good one, is an additional $100,000 for wolf conflict. And that was not agency request budget, but it was provided, I think, by our partners kind of focusing and knowing that there could be growth or more need in that program. So we received some additional funding there. And then one other piece, which Ben is going to cover in his research section of his presentation, but there was money provided to UW for scat research in the South Cascades, and so we'll touch on that. But it, of course, links back to the wolf program. So, any questions on the just kind of budget over the legislative overview piece? Okay. Well, with that, I'll turn it over to Ben.
Thank you, Eric. All right, does that work? Can you guys hear me? All right. So, yeah, thank you very much for having us today. And today we're just going to give you a quick update on where we're at with our wolves. And we finished up our annual surveys. We're working on writing up the annual report, and that'll be available on March 30th of this month. So be in writing, but this is all the numbers that we have that'll be going into that report for an update to you guys. So today we'll start out, just want to give you a brief summary of what the presentation, we're going to be looking at our recovery objectives, a brief overview on that, and how wolves are recolonizing Washington State, where we're at on our listing status, looking at where our numbers are in population monitoring and our trends, and then Dan will be covering the livestock-wolf interactions, and I'll come back on, and if Malia's not here, give a quick research update toward the end. So, really, with our wolf plan that we've got in place, we're looking to restore self-sustaining wolf populations. We definitely want to maintain healthy ungulate populations and manage for wolf livestock conflicts and help where we can with that to minimize those conflicts, and really to develop a public understanding and promote coexistence with wolves on the landscape, kind of from a 30,000 foot level, what we're looking to do with the wolf plan. Wolves are highly mobile critters, and they have an amazing ability to disperse. This was a study done in the Rocky Mountains, looking at 297 individuals that had dispersal events. Typically, wolves will disperse around 2.5 years old, and they can both equally, males and females, disperse at the same time, and really about the same distance, about 85 to 100 kilometers for an average dispersal distance. And they typically will disperse in fall and kind of peak in January, just before the breeding season. And so that's where our wolves are kind of coming from in Washington and recolonizing the state. We see wolves coming in from Idaho and British Columbia down in Oregon. And so you can, because we got three sides on that eastern part of the state, we've seen recolonization quite a bit faster in the northeast part of the state, but coming down in the Cascades, it's kind of coming from BC, and it's kind of a one route in for now, because Oregon doesn't have much of a population in the central part of the state yet, so... We haven't seen the North Cascades pick up quite as quickly. So for a listing status, right now wolves are federally delisted in the eastern third of the state from Highway 97, basically east. They're federally delisted. That was included in the Northern Rocky Mountain Distinct Population Segment back in 2007. There's no federal requirements in the eastern third of the state right now, but they are listed as endangered statewide and covered under the management of the Wolf Conservation Management Plan. And so with that, it's been divided up into three recovery areas: the Eastern Washington Recovery Area, the North Cascades Recovery Area, and the South Cascades and Coastal Recovery Area. And with the plan, we'd like to see PACs established in each of those recovery areas before we begin our delisting requirements. And so right now we're co-managing with the federal government, the state government, and tribal management, and working together to kind of monitor where wolves are in their recolonization. So as part of that plan, we're looking kind of the metric is successful breeding pairs, but we consider a pack two or more wolves traveling together, and a successful breeding pair is a male and a female that raises at least two pups until December 31st of that year. So to get to that metric of successful breeding pairs. And so when we're actually looking for wolves and trying to figure out where they are in the landscape, we really value public input. There's a lot of biologists around the state, and we work with other agencies. We work with groups like Conservation Northwest doing remote camera surveys and things. But really, a lot of the information comes from the public that are out snowmobiling, cross-country skiing, hunting. They have remote cameras up in their backyard. We get a lot of reports in that way, and we have access on the website that they can put in pictures and upload pictures and a location of where that is, and that's really helpful to us to see where reports are coming in. So when we get those reports, and if it comes in as a depredation, we have conflict staff out, and we can get those reports. And the sighting reports come in, we can go out and check on those areas. We can get cameras out. We can do track surveys and howl surveys and things to determine if wolves are in those areas. And if we do find multiple animals moving around, a lot of times we'll try and get a trapper in there during the summer to get a collar out in that pack. And that's... if we do get a collar in that pack, then in the following winter, we can actually come in with a helicopter because we know where those animals are moving. They travel as a pack, and we're able to put other collars out and also get counts in the wintertime. And so it's quite a process to keep up with wolves across the state. It's a big area to work with. And so when we do that, each year we do these surveys, and where we've got a collar out in the pack, we'll fly over with a fixed-wing aircraft, multiple surveys in the wintertime, and actually physically count those animals to get a minimum count. And I stress that these numbers are just a minimum count of what's on the landscape. This, it's tough to to find every animal out there, find every wolf on the landscape. And so weather conditions, if it's clouded in over a pack, we might miss that pack on that particular survey. Track surveys, it's based on snow conditions. And the packs, they don't always travel together in one cohesive group. It might be two going this direction, three going that direction, and then they come back together. And so, you know, when we put these numbers out, it's just a minimum count. And so for our numbers this year, you can see in the Eastern Washington recovery area, we've got 13 successful breeding pairs. We only had one successful breeding pair in the North Cascades this year. But our minimum count for the Eastern recovery area was 106, and the North Cascades, we had 16 individuals. We still haven't seen any pack behavior in the South Cascades. We've gotten reports down there, but we have not seen any pack behavior down there yet. I'm going to point out an error in my math. I updated our dispersal map here, but I didn't tally the total on the bottom, so that should be 9 for the known dispersals. And then we had 14 total mortalities this year, as well as 8 livestock depredations across the state. So that's the overall status. We'll break it down a little bit more here to look at where we've got some new packs. New pack that established up here in the Togo pack, the Five Sisters pack, the Frosty pack in the Colville Confederated Tribes, and then the Grouse Flats down in the Blue Mountains. And so we did collar an animal up in Skagit, but we have done multiple surveys and put cameras up there, and we've still only seen just that one traveling by itself, which is interesting because he's displaying that territorial nature. He's staying in one spot, but we just haven't been able to see anybody with him. And again, that comes down to that minimum count thing. It's pretty dense timber and forest, and we've caught him on remote camera multiple times, but have not caught any companions yet. So we're still watching that. Areas where it changed, the Sherman pack area, we did have one individual moving in that area during winter surveys, but that pack, it was just one individual, so we don't consider it a pack this year. And then Skookum is another change. We did multiple surveys out there, and we're unable to find evidence of that pack using that area where they've historically been. And so, but we did get a GPS collar back on Goodman Meadows, and they're using a little bit bigger area there, so they may have, something may have changed there. But we're unsure the reasoning. So given that map, I just wanted to briefly talk about territoriality. When you think about wolf movements, I liken it to like a wagon wheel, where this is actually movements of a wolf within a pack. And so you can see kind of that hub in the center where they may be a den site, a rendezvous site, places the core area of that pack, and then they do these patrolling patterns around the outside of that pack. And so they will defend those territories, and they may chase out other wolves or kill other wolves. So when you have a pack territory, it's just for those animals in the pack, and that's what creates that density dependence and stops them from just exponentially growing across the landscape with those numbers. And so as you get packs filling in like Northeast Washington, there's only so many packs that can fit in there due to that territoriality of these individuals.
Back up one slide, would you please?
Sure.
Now, you're saying that you're giving us a known pack down on Grouse Flats?
Oh, yeah. We can go right there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So we did, we had down in the Blue Mountains, we did determine there were 3 animals moving down in that Grouse Flats area. This past winter, we were able to do track surveys and find them. At the same time, we found Toucanon. And so definitely different areas. And so the Grouse Flats is kind of down overlapping Oregon and Washington, but we think that they bred here in Washington this year. We had a trapper out there this summer, a biologist that was working and got pictures of pups from that pack.
But you didn't get a collar on them, did you?
No, unfortunately. We were close, but weren't able to get a collar in that pack this last summer. So, but we did, from winter surveys, we did determine they were still there, and there were three individuals.
Yeah, I found a kill here a couple weeks ago. So are you going to try and attempt to get a caller on that pack?
Yeah, our priority first is going to, we've got a predator prey project going on in the Meadow, in the Cascades, and over in Northeast Washington. And there's two packs that we want to focus on first as part of those research projects to get. And then we'll start working on those, the other packs that aren't within that research area. But we'd like to, if we've got other animals collared, we want to try and get each of those packs collared in the research areas first. And then we'll allocate to the other areas.
Well, that's why I knew you had a trapper down there last summer, and I'd
been. Yep, we tried. We just didn't quite pull it off. These guys are pretty tough to catch sometimes. So, all right. Any other questions? Okay. So, kind of going to that, we did capture 12 wolves last summer in 12 different packs. Over the year, we monitored 22 different wolves from 15 packs, and because some. Either dispersed out or were killed, or the collars malfunctioned. We're down to 16 collared wolves right now from 11 different packs, as well as that one lone wolf in Skagit that we haven't determined whether he's traveling with anybody or not, but so far just by himself. So this is a breakdown of the individual packs and kind of what we see for successful breeding pairs. In that first column, this is in the Eastern Washington recovery area. And again, we're at 13 breeding pairs, 106 individuals in the eastern part of the state. We do add, because we can't count all the individual wolves, but we know they're out there, so we do add 12.5% of the number of known wolves that we have to kind of account for those that minimum number of just lone wolves and dispersal wolves out on the landscape. We did have quite a bit of dispersal this year, and I'll go into that shortly, and depredations in five packs out of the 22 packs that we counted. In the North Cascades, we have three known packs, and then the Skagit wolf that we're monitoring, and so our minimum counts, only one of those was a breeding pair this year. Loop-loop dropped back down to two individuals, and Lookout is at three. The male and Loop-loop pack is pretty old, so we'll see how they do this year. So our overall trends are still looking pretty good. We're up to 122 individuals statewide. We're still on the increase. We had a growth of about 6% this year. But overall, we're still at about a 31% increase. So every couple of years, you might have a little plateau, and it steps up. And so but we're still seeing that increase and still moving forward on our minimum count. Successful breeding pairs, we actually had a pretty good jump in breeding pairs this year. We went from 10 to 14, which is still a showing the productivity of the population. We're still on the upswing, and wolves are producing pups, so that's a good sign. Trend in number of wolf packs, we're continuing to climb on that as well. In the East Cascades, we're still increasing and adding some packs. It's been kind of a plateau on the North Cascades, and I'm waiting for that to take off, and I think it will here soon, but we haven't hit that kind of influx of wolves from other areas and the production in the North Cascades yet, but I think we'll start seeing a rise in that as well. So we had known wolf mortalities this year. We did have 14 mortalities. We had a couple vehicle collisions, we had a couple caught in the axe, and we removed three individuals with lethal removal, and then we had four individuals that were on that are under investigation.
Yeah, just, I know it's a figure that you probably can't get, but do you factor in any illegal taking, poaching?
It's tough to get those. With the numbers that we have from collared individuals, that's our sample of that, but it's really tough to get an estimate of the wolves that are killed with that are not collared. And so We can kind of get a baseline estimate from just our collared sample. But yeah, that's a really tough number to get to. So.
And when you guys get together, your gut feeling on illegal taking, is that major heartburn, minor heartburn?
You know, I think wolves are pretty resilient, you know, and they recovered in northwest Montana and northern Idaho, and you know, they were able to still continue, and we're still seeing increases in the population. And so, you know, it's definitely a factor, but, you know, I think wolves are pretty resilient that way, that it can impact, but I think we're still seeing positive trajectories. So
that's good. Thank you.
So kind of going into those 9 dispersals, it's pretty remarkable, the ability for these wolves to travel. Just point out, we had a wolf disperse from Smackout territory in northeast Washington and made a trek all the way to Wyoming, which was a 1,700-mile trek. So think about hoofing that one. That's a long ways to go. They're pretty remarkable at where they can move. We had another one go from Loop Loop Pack, which is in north central Washington, and go 540 miles up into BC. And then we had a couple others disperse shorter distances. One of the wolves, females from Dirty Shirt Pack, dispersed and met another wolf and set up a pack up in Lead Point, just north of Smackout. So that helped us and gave us another pack this year. And so we have shorter distance dispersals, and we have some longer ones as well. But they're highly mobile individuals, and we have data from 8 of those 9 up there, I think, and one of them we just happened to capture. It was a recapture from, it moved from Huckleberry up into the Stranger Pack, and so it was a dispersal, but we didn't have the data. Her collar had popped off, and so we just knew that she had moved because she was marked when we caught her. So we added that to the dispersal as well.
Excuse me.
I just want to bring this up as I look at that map. And when the Wolf Conservation Plan was made, I think it was the best science, and it was a huge process, and I understand the science that went into it to set us at 15 breeding pairs in 3 areas, and as I understand it and remember correctly, or 18 breeding pairs for 3 years in a row.
Correct.
But I look at that, and I'm with all the social tension around wolves, and I think with one line change and 2 word changes, we'd be one pack away, one breeding pair away from recovery. So if we had just called it northeastern Washington, drawn a red line straight across to Idaho so we had a better source population from Idaho and Oregon into south Washington and northwest coast, we'd almost be there. And I think about this a lot, where we do the best we can, but it's so hard to adapt. Mm-hmm. And it would seem like, I know the process to go through SEPA and NEPA and all this, again, to just make a one-line change and a 2-word change, but we didn't know as much as we know now. We didn't know how they were going to recolonize different parts of the state. And I know we're kind of now in this game of, well, that would take way too much work and cause a whole big effort just to rewrite that, add 2 words in one line. Or wait till we reach 18 breeding pairs, which we're not far away from that either. Or somehow they get across to the southern Cascades and northwest coast, even though there's no really good source population around that, until North Cascades moves further south. But it's not coming from eastern Washington, you know. Anyway, it's just a point made that I wish we were more flexible.
Mr. Thorburn.
I second that. And one other observation on this map, noting that, you know, the best available information went into the planning. At least in the sample of dispersing wolves that we can see, they're not dispersing south. So another wish that we could be more flexible.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, if I could, I'll take a minute to address those. Valid input, and you're right. It's not easy. You know, that we've got a lot of great resources in the state, and I've got some of them next to me here on the team, but I've never been issued the easy button yet for any of these tough topics, right? And I certainly don't have it for how we can be a little bit quicker and adaptive in this wolf world. But I will say there's several things underway to at least help us get there, right? So we have the ongoing efforts with the Wolf Advisory Group looking as their priority work to look at kind of the post delisting or from this point forward management. We'll kind of see where they go and talking about what it looks like to manage wolves as we know things today and the changes in what we know and how to move forward. And then the SEPA work that I mentioned before is really to open up a potential door for us or to provide a tool for us if we find that we need to use it or choose to use it in years to come so that we would be prepared. So the SEPA work doesn't mandate translocation of wolves, but it asks us to do the work, to do the homework, to be prepared. And so if we don't feel like we are going to achieve the wolf recovery objectives soon enough, and I know there are some who are saying it already isn't soon enough, but if we get to that point where we decide we need to take that step, that's what the SEPA work, having been completed, will do for us. It'll allow us to make that management decision and take action. So those aren't the easy button for tomorrow, but they are a couple of things that are in process to at least allow us to be more adaptive and flexible as we move forward in the coming years.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that question, if there is some SEPA analysis that's being prepared so that there could be, so it would be considered if we're going to talk about delisting criteria or this or that, what prohibits that from being expanded so that the entire policy could be reviewed and these kind of the kind of learning that has happened over the past several years be applied and make it a better plan?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner McIsaac, nothing precludes that. And I think as we work through the Wolf Advisory Group and as they kind of formulate, I guess, exactly what the concept of post-delisting management looks like and what they're going to take on, they can consider and look at that. And we could certainly take direction, you know, to do that very thing. But those are the processes that are in motion right now to kind of determine, you know, what would be the scope of that effort and what we would want to consider. And certainly taking advantage of, or maybe it may not be the right way to say it, but adding on to the opportunity that the SEPA process will provide us for the translocation piece to include within that SEPA analysis some other pieces such as what we do post-delisting or looking at the current plan. Those are all viable options for us to consider. And like I said earlier, we're sort of in the planning stages around the SEPA piece, and we'll be getting back to you, so we'll have some dialogue about some of those opportunities.
Barbara?
I don't see any reason to rush the process. Ever since I've been following this and listening to Donnie Martinello, the thought was around 2021 we'd meet our objectives. We are in the middle of something that we're doing correctly. We have 8 depredations last year, which to me is surprisingly low, and I realize I don't want to minimize that, but to the ranchers that experienced those depredations, you know, it was a big deal. But to have only 4 packs and 2 of those had 1 depredation each, I think that shows that we are doing just a terrific job managing this process. We're getting $100,000 that we didn't even ask for to put toward fixing, making the situation easier. I assume that's all of the conflict resolution processes that we've used in the past. And to answer Commissioner McIsaac's question, what's to stop us from reopening this plan? If we reopen this plan, we aren't going to change 2 words in 1 line. It's going to be a huge suck on the resources of all of us and go around the WAG process, which we have spent a lot of money on and seems to be reasonably successful so far. So I just want to point out that I don't see any reason to mess with success, and I certainly don't think that we are in a position right now to reopen that plan.
Thank you. Yes.
I find myself wondering why I'm taking the opposite position to that. I'm not supposed to, I guess, but I do. And I guess it's because of some of the ties I've had with the ranching community over the years. And even though, and I agree with you, Barbara, that things are moving along well. The Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission, when we went over to visit them and we first started getting wolves, they said, the biology is simple. They'll reproduce and they'll be there. Just give it enough time. But the people aspects of it, you better keep on top of it or it will really, really hurt you. And that's what I'm more worried about. We've been hearing from Northeast Washington for years now, we're overrun with wolves. And at first we thought, yeah. You know, they're just new there and they're not used to them. But they are overrun with wolves. Southeast Washington will sooner or later be full up on their quota of wolf packs. And I think Jay might have something to say about that. And so I guess I'd like us to keep an open mind, and I would like to recommend, if the commission approved of it, was to at least ask staff to look into, as long as you're looking into the CEPA process for translocation, to look into the CEPA process to make that simple change. One, stretching out of that red line to the eastern Washington, right there, and the change of one word in each of the definitions of those areas we described, call one Northeast Washington, call one South Washington. Okay, everyone knows what that means. It means we're that much closer to recovery. I guess what I feel now is we're at recovery. We just don't meet it by definition that we established 7 years ago. And that bothers me because there's people that come to these meetings, you know, and tell us their stories about losing livestock, and that's all part of wolf recovery. But I'm really hearing that, and it's bothering me at this stage of the game that we can't make at least look into, could we make an adjustment, not be afraid of it, if it made sense. So I'd like to recommend to staff, if the commission agreed, to at least look at that possibility as you look at this translocation process that we've got money for. 186,000 or whatever, that's great, and translocation might be a tool we can use. But two-word change in a line extension doesn't cost a lot of money. The process to get there would, I understand that. I just think we ought to open the door to that possibility. I never thought we would need translocation. I thought wolves would just totally do it on their own. And I'm beginning to think we might need translocation. And we never, if we started this 4 years ago, we might have been in a better position now. So maybe we should start this idea of some very simple changes to the wolf plan, if they make sense and if it's feasible. Why not at least look at the opportunity?
We'll take the other one.
I very much support that recommendation. And just to point out, yes, we do hear that we're on track for the 2021 meeting the recovery goals, just in terms of the dispersal. But getting back to the initial modeling assumptions, everybody who was involved in the plan development says we didn't expect this pile up in Northeast Washington. We expected the dispersal to be a little bit more spread out. And it really has created that social pressure, despite all of the outstanding work by staff. And I just would advocate for supporting the recommendation that we move forward with looking at the plan.
Yeah, Commissioner Carpenter.
There's a lot been said about this by my colleagues, and I appreciate it, but I'm going to support Commissioner Keeney's suggestion for staff to investigate this and report back to us.
Sure. Okay. Yes.
And there again, Barbara, you did a really good job of doing your best not to minimize the 8 depredations. But a couple weeks ago, I was at a bull sale and ran into Dave and Julie DeShiel. They had 33 confirmed sheep kills is what we're confirmed. They come down off the hill with 300 less sheep. They're out of the sheep business because of this. And there again, confirmed, yeah, I run cattle. Do every one of them come back? No. And trying to track down, we're in big country. And, you know, yeah, you have a mortality, but I mean, there's some that kind of leaves you scratching your head going, now what happened to that one? So we never want to minimize the 8 depredations because reality can be a lot more than that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there are some people that just basically don't turn in up in that part of the world because they don't want to draw light to themselves because they've been down that dusty trail. So we got to be really careful as far as from the ranching community not to minimize that 8 deal, because if they're yours, yeah, it's a pretty big deal because it's pretty thin margins in that business. And anything, you know, when it's yours, it hurts. So, and there's also weight loss and not breeding. So, not to pick on you, but I'm just wanting to point that one out.
All right, Barbara. And then we'll move on.
Claire, my comments were toward reopening the Wolf Plan. In terms of the translocation and all the work that we did with Representative Kretz this legislative session trying to address the pileup, translocation was a part of the thought of doing translocation was a part of the 2011 Wolf Plan. It's a pretty normal scientific process that even wolf refuges and those kind of places use often. So my position is that we should go along with what the policy, the legislators have told us, Eastern Washington legislators have asked for, put it in front of the WAG, put it in front of the staff, and look at that before we start talking about reopening that plan, which I believe will be a can of worms.
And we'll let Joe have that
one. I'm just curious about procedure. We have differences of opinion on this, and staff is probably wondering which way to go. So what do we need to do there?
Yeah, a great discussion. It's very nice to have the commissioners as engaged as they are in this controversial issue. So I really appreciate that. But I would like some clarity. I mean, this seems like a blue sheet kind of a discussion. And so I would just ask for a written statement in terms of what you're looking for, and a vote, and you know, just some formality around the direction here.
And I second that. I don't think getting to that point was part of this discussion. So I think what we have to do, I think we've had a good discussion now, and if you want to put a blue sheet forward, and then we can do it, so we can put forward on a vote on that, and then provide that clarity and direction. I think there is direction. I think there's clarity and understanding, but that wasn't the purpose of getting to this morning. So we're clear on...
Comes at the end of this meeting then?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Continue, guys.
Thank you. All right, so we just wanted to throw up a summary slide, kind of the stuff I've been talking about. Again, just to see how it compares to previous years. In actual numbers. So we went from 115 to 122 on the minimum count, and 20 to 22 packs this year. But that successful breeding pairs was our biggest jump there for productivity, from 10 to 14, so that's a good thing. Overall, it was only a 6% increase in minimum numbers, but when we look at that over the long haul, we're still at a 31% geometric mean for a growth rate for the population. And so, again, the mortality this year was 14, and the number of depredating packs, 5 of the 22 packs, had at least one incidence of the injuring or killing a livestock. And so, but when we look at overall, the average there is 12% of all the packs, but still around that 20% per year with the packs that we have. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dan to talk a little bit about the conflict management.
I'll get settled in here. Okay, conflict management. Can you hear me? Kind of an oxymoron. I don't like the term and managing wildlife conflict. I'm wrestling with a different term that I could use or a different title I could have for this section. And if you have any ideas, I'd love to hear them. Because what I like to think that we're doing is we're...
Congress.
Okay, sure. There we go. Yeah. I'd like to think that what I'm trying to do is managing wildlife in a way that we can integrate their populations in a human influenced landscape. But I just can't seem to capture that in a really good acronym. So if you have any ideas, let me know. So one of the important goals of the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan for Washington is to manage wolf livestock conflicts in a way that minimizes livestock losses while not affecting the recovery and long-term perpetuation of a sustainable wolf population. In 2017, we've used a variety of different preventative measures to minimize that potential for livestock depredations caused by wolves. The methods include the use of flattery, electrified fencing, reg boxes, fox lights, livestock guarding dogs, actually hazing the wolves from the livestock and human residences, range riders providing wolf location data to livestock producers, removal of injured and or dead livestock from grazing sites, and other techniques are also used to minimize that include both non-lethal and lethal removal of depredating wolves. Some of the mechanisms that we have in the field involve the use of our personnel, our wildlife conflict specialists. We have specialists deployed throughout each district across the state, and of course the districts in the eastern portion of the state have become experts in wolf livestock depredation management or deterrence management. They coordinate with our producers. They initiate contracts. The DPCAL stands for Damage Prevention Cooperative Agreement for Livestock. These are cost share contracts that we have to help implement non-lethal deterrent measures for the producers on both the public grazing allotments and their own farms. We also have a cadre of contracted range riders that we deploy to help monitor cattle behavior and provide a non-lethal deterrent for livestock depredations. When things really go south on us, of course, that's when we start looking at the incremental removal of wolves to change that pack's behavior. And then, of course, we have a compensation program for livestock loss due to wolf depredation. This graph kind of shows the history or the statistics since 2007 that shows the number of packs compared to the number of packs depredating on livestock. And last year, like Ben mentioned, we had 5 of the 22 known packs that existed at some point during 2017 were involved in at least one confirmed livestock mortality. This shows going back from 2007 again, the actual number of wolf-caused livestock losses.
Okay.
Do I have a question? No. Okay.
No, we were just...
I'm sorry. So these are based on reported livestock injuries, mortalities, and do not reflect lost or missing livestock. So confirmed livestock mortalities caused by wolves in Washington included at least 8 cattle. Investigators also confirmed 5 cattle as being injured by wolves. And most of those mortalities occur in the summer months. Okay. This graph just shows that as expected during the grazing period of the year, that's when most of our mortalities occur. We have developed with the WEG process that Chairperson Baker spoke of. We've implemented our wolf, basically the lethal removal protocol that gives us a structure for the non-lethal deterrent activities that must be in place in order to consider the lethal removal, and then the parameters around that removal itself. And of course, our removals are transparent to the public, posted on our website, and read about in newspapers across the state generally. Our cost share contracts that promote our deterrence measures, again, they include the implementation of these non-lethal tools that we use. We have, let's see. Okay. We had, I think, $306,000 worth of contracts covering 55 different producers. So contracted range riders, this is my favorite. How would you like to be at a wedding reception for some second cousin or something and be able to say that you were a range rider, you know, when people are asking what you do for a living? I would like to do that. These guys, though, they're not just running around on their horses and sitting around a campfire singing songs. They're experts in cattle behavior and the behavior as it relates to the presence of wolves in the area. They're experts at detecting wolf sign, and so what they are is they're sort of our thin line between the wolf packs and the cattle themselves. Their presence in itself is a deterrent to wolf depredation, and then the tools and just the being out there rounding up injured cattle, getting them off the landscape, identifying carcasses and making sure that those are disposed of and removed for sanitation to avoid attracting wolves into the area are all part of their duties. We contracted with 8 private organizations for a total of 15 range riders to provide our services in 2017. Yes, sir.
Jake Keeney sponsored me to go to a quote-unquote range rider school last year.
Cool. I wish I was invited.
And went to that. And after having gone to that, I think a person needs to change, instead of calling them range riders, because I was of the belief that you're out there being in the presence and keeping the wolves spooked back off the cattle. But that isn't it. They should be range observers is what they are, because that's truly what those people are out there doing, is observing what is going on. The cattle, like you said, picking up those. But watching and seeing what is going on, that was the whole part of it that was just amazing to me. And the gals that put it on were just through the roof, how much they understood the wolves and the cattle and all of that. So, yeah, the range rider's a cool word for it, but it is just a very minute part of what they actually do out there.
Right. Yep, I agree. Thank you. So this slide shows our uptake and use of our proactive deterrence measures over the past 5 years, and you can see that it corresponds to the actual wolf population recovery effort so far, and we've been very fortunate, extremely fortunate, with all of our partners and our staff, and Donnie Martorello working with the legislators and with you folks to be able to continue receiving fundings that we can get back out onto the landscape in the form of these programs. Next year, this season will be an interesting one because there's funding sources additional to what we have to offer this year through a Department of Ag grant in the four northeastern counties, and then two of the sheriff's departments also received some funding. So we're coordinating, trying to coordinate a meeting right now with those folks that have those programs now, or will be implementing them this season, so that we can make sure that our efforts are coordinated to provide the best for the producers out there, so we're neither tripping over each other nor unintentionally missing something. All right, I got stuck with this slide. Here's the money. Here's our Wolf expenditures, July 1, 2016 through June 30th, our fiscal year, 2017. And this kind of walks you through where the money went between captures and our surveys, our staff time, and then our Wolf conflict management, where it went in terms of our cost share agreements and our range riders. And the compensation, the $57,000 you see there is, we spent $3,700 in compensation loss claims in 2017. That 52 and change is actually carryover responsibility from a large claim from 2016. And our lethal removal effort at 135 for a grand total of 1.2. Yeah, almost 1.3 million.
Dan?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair. Dan, does that include the compensation for Francine Madden and the WEG?
Yes. I'm being told no.
Okay. Mr. Mazur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the slide in the bottom right, there's some acronyms.
Okay.
And this is not a federal obligation, because these wolves are not listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. This is a state Endangered Species Act obligation. So could you decode those? I see the word orca even down there, as to whether or not this is coming out of the department's budget in general fund, or whether there's a special grant for this, or what?
Am I on? There we go. Mr. Chair, Commissioner McIsaac. Yeah, there are several fund sources wrapped into our wolf management. Part of it is because it's not just a simple piece. This is our attempt to carve out what we can specifically exist on the ground or in our management due to wolves. But if you think about our conflict program, it also deals with elk and many other animals. So we have to kind of tease out all of that information. But for the acronyms here, I think it's accurate to say all of those have contributed to wolf management in the state. So WLS is Wildlife State. So that's very specific wildlife funding, state wildlife funding. State general fund, so that's when the legislature gives us money for things like Francine or for the DPCALs, when we get specific general fund for those contracts. PLP is our personalized license plate, which is really a pretty flexible account. It's in place for the management of our non-game diversity species primarily, and certainly wolf is a part of that with the wolf recovery plan. ORCA is very specific for endangered species management. So if you purchase the license plate background that has the orca on it, those funds go to endangered species recovery, once again hitting the mark for wolves. And then there is, even though you mentioned that it's not a federal obligation, our Pittman-Robertson funds, which play a big part in our conflict program in general, those are federal funds that are available for bird and mammal management, and there's support for putting those funds into the management of species that either are hunted or perhaps are in decline or have a history of needing recovery or management action due to previous hunting or trapping and other activities. And with a potential, you know, maybe ramp down the road of having them be recovered someday. And I'm losing the rest because of the column, but I think I've covered the fund sources, the acronyms. Do you have any questions?
Is there a wolf license plate?
So the personalized license plate had an additional fee tacked onto it several years back, $10, and that specifically then goes to
wolf
management.
I have the orca, but I didn't.
Correct. There is not a wolf background plate.
Yeah, okay.
But before we had the $10, we would use personalized license plate, and then the $10 $1,000 fee was to compensate for that, so we wouldn't keep tapping into the other species management needs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and thank you for the answer. If a constituent asked me whether or not hunting license money is going into this program, would the answer be yes or no?
Yes. Yep.
I got a steelhead.
Yeah, Barbara.
I got an orca steelhead.
Well, and I, to clarify that, wildlife state also includes PLP, correct? So Joe, so that's the more precise answer for where the wildlife state comes from. I guess I would have to tease out if we would be able to point to hunter license dollars there. I don't know if I know the answer to that off the top of my head. So I'll get back to you.
Thank you.
So realizing that we've gone off the rails a bit on this presentation, this is an important slide, and if we note that because we are successfully in the process of recovering a wolf population, we put about $1.2 million of state money into it, in addition to the money that's going to the sheriffs this year, the Department of Ag grant, and then our other, whoever else is contributing. When we look to, I'm also looking at this and seeing that at least $550,000, probably more, is going almost directly to the producers, not counting compensation. I'd like, if we get to open the plan to make it easier to delist analysis, I'd like to include an economic component to that in terms of what would happen to all that money, because my assumption is it would dry up. And so I that's part of this. That's not science, that's social science, but I would like to know that.
All righty.
All right, so we're going to jump into the research side of things, and I just wanted to mention a couple projects that finished up. Zoe Hanley finished her PhD dissertation, and Gabe Spence finished a master's thesis. Both work WSU, and those are available. I know Hanley is trying to get some of that work published right now, and I'm not sure where Spence is on that publication process other than the thesis is out. Azura Valerio is still working on her dissertation, and hopefully it'll be out this summer sometime. And she's wrapping up, and again, she's out of WSU as well. And then we also have, as Eric mentioned earlier, that legislature allocated $172,000 to UW, to Sam Wasser's lab, I believe, to do some scat dog research in the South Cascades, to do some ungulate and carnivore monitoring down there, and potentially looking for some new wolf packs as well. So that's coming on this summer. I just got that late to not get it in the presentation. So, and then Malia is here to discuss the Predator Prey Project, which is ongoing as a department project.
Good morning. For those of you who don't know, this is my first commission meeting. So I'm Malia DeVivo. I'm the ungulate research scientist based out of Spokane, the regional office. I'm here today to discuss the ungulate side of the Predator Prey Project. And here we go. So in the winter of 2015, the legislature mandated us to collaborate with the University of Washington to determine the impacts of wolf predation on co-occurring deer and elk populations. So then in December 2015, Science Division presented the potential conceptual framework of this project to staff at Program School. And then in the spring and summer of 2016, Science and Game Division staff came together and they formalized the research questions, objectives, and study areas for this project. And then in the fall of 2016, the agency met with the three UW faculty collaborators, who are Drs. Aaron Worsing, Laura Prue, and Beth Gardner. And at this time, we also ordered the collars and finalized our capture logistics for this project. So then in the winter of 2016 and 2017, we began collecting data, and that involved capturing both carnivores and ungulates for the project. And this is also when I was hired on by the agency. And then in the fall of 2017, we got all four UW graduate students on board with the project. So to date, for the ungulate side and as well as the carnivore side, we are just right now 15 months into data collection. And broadly, that involves collection of survival and cause-specific mortality, reproduction and recruitment of young, determining age class structures of these herds, and geographic distribution relative to the resources that they're utilizing, as well as their distribution based on predator occurrence. So we're relying mainly on capturing and collaring adult females because females drive these populations. So for this study, we're focusing on elk and white-tailed deer in the northeast and mule deer in the north central portion of the state. This map here shows location data that we have collected in 2017. And as you can see, the mule deer, they're mostly distributed in western Okanagan County, and they remain on the east slopes of the Cascades. And then the elk and white-tailed deer are distributed throughout Stevens and Ponderay counties in GMUs 117 and 121. So again, our capture efforts began in last winter. Our target sample sizes are 100 mule deer, 50 elk, and 65 white-tailed deer. This past winter, we were able to meet our mule deer and elk target sample sizes. However, we're still working on getting that 65 whitetail target sample size. And this is mainly because with the mule deer and elk, we're using methods where we can go out and pursue and catch animals using the helicopter. Unfortunately, we can't do that with the whitetails just because of terrain and the habitats that they're in. So we rely on trapping. So this completely is dependent on whether or not those animals want to go into those traps. So it's a little more time consuming and a little more difficult compared to doing the helicopter captures. So I'm going to present a little bit of preliminary data that we've collected in 2017. The main thing I'd like you to remember is that we did not reach our target sample sizes until this winter for the mule deer and elk, and we're not there yet for the whitetails. So the data I'm presenting is based on very low sample sizes, and I caution you not to make some assumptions from this information, and it's just basically showing you what we've seen and observed this past year. So for the mule deer, we had 20 collared out of those 100. 95% of them were pregnant. We had 100% survival. For the elk, we collared 34, 85% were pregnant, and we saw a survival probability of 82%. And again, pretty large confidence intervals on that because of the low sample size. Of those mortalities, we did not determine that there were wolves were involved in those mortalities. For the whitetails, we had 19 collared, 94% were pregnant, and again, survival probability was 63% with very large confidence intervals on that. We did not have a known wolf predation of those collared animals, and we weren't able to determine the cause of death on five, and this is mostly because of extensive scavenging and decomposition of tissues where we couldn't submit those carcasses in for a accurate cause of mortality. Yes?
The survival probability is adult animals, right? Will you be looking at
Correct.
Mortality on young?
So, yes, the results I'm presenting right now are all adult females. UW has taken on a neonate component of this project. They're in the initial phases of it, so last spring and summer, they captured very minimal amount of whitetail fawns just as a proof of concept for the project. So right now we're assessing those that portion of the project and seeing if we should continue with that. So this slide just shows a graph of breaking down the causes of mortality that we've observed up until this March. So while we had 100% survival of the mule deer last year in 2017, since January 2018, we have observed, documented some mortality. Most of those, we were not able to determine the cause. We did have one that was salvaged using the new salvage tag laws, and it was hit by a vehicle. For the elk, we did have one that we weren't able to determine the cause of mortality. The other causes are mostly related to human cause. Specific with two that were killed during the general hunting season, two that were harvested using depredation tags, and then one that was illegally harvested. And then we also had one that died due to some unknown disease. For the whitetails, again, we still had two that we were not able to determine cause of mortality. We had two that were hit by vehicles, and one that was related to a non-wolf predation, and this was attributed to coyotes. So basically the main takeaway of this slide is that we're dealing with various types of mortality, most of which are human-related, and we have not yet documented a known wolf predation for the study. So just to wrap up, you know, it's too early at this time to do any sort of rigorous analyses on the data we've collected. It's only 15 months into data collection. We are slated to go through 2021, so this is a multi-year project. We will eventually use this information to populate our statistical models to quantify the impacts of wolf predation on each species' population growth rates. And then finally, we are collaborating with the University of Washington, and this is the list of the four graduate students on board with the project, and they are currently trying to write up their proposals and determine their specific research questions for the project. So that's all I have at this time. Yes.
Okay, questions? We do have a number of folks lined up for the next go-around.
Yeah. On your final predator-prey project, you don't mention the objective of the geographic impact of the predators on the prey, and it just seems like, given the testimony that we receive, it's a really important component of the research, so I hope it gets included.
So the geographic impact of the predators.
Yeah, moving prey around, and it's certainly something that is talked about a whole lot by our constituents.
Sure, yeah, and we're in the initial phases of this project, so a lot of the research questions have not been completely hashed out by everyone that's incorporated into the project, so that's something that I'll take back to our collaborators.
Great. Just like to see it stay on the table.
Yeah.
And as it progresses, we would like to have you and the students come back and an ongoing progress, you know, to see how it's going.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, Joe, you want to wrap that up then?
Yeah, just one quick question. As we approach delisting, do we have other tools outside or in addition to hunting that become available to us?
For predator management, is that?
For wolf management, yeah.
Cars?
Get all the way over here. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, Commission, Director Storr, it's a good question, and I certainly think there are additional tools. Struggling to think of many other than the fact it would increase our flexibility on what we chose to authorize for other participants to work on our behalf as agents of the state and things in that arena. Essentially a you know, a population that is not, say, being regulated due to endangered species status. Hunting is a mechanism to address population control or conflict. And right now, it's a pretty small network of folks who are involved in that, and a delisting might broaden the scope of availability in that arena. So that's one place I can think of in addition to hunting. I'm struggling to identify another potential tool.
Cars.
Cars. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, education. Yep. Another question? No.
Not a question, a comment. And there again, this is pointed to a whole bunch of people in this room, staff. You put up the slide, said there's, what, 1.3 million last year, the Francine Project. By the time they hired her and all the people that volunteered, I mean, there's millions of dollars involved in this deal. And last June, it was brought out to me really succinctly how tenuous a line we were walking. There was an issue happened in our county, and I was so pissed off over the deal, I literally wrote out my letter of resignation. Because I had gone to umpteen cattlemen's groups and meetings in our part of the world, and told everybody, this isn't a perfect situation, but we got to make the best of it. There was a lot of money involved, a lot of people involved, and people that I was trusting. And like I said, there was a deal happened that really made me question how honest everybody was being in this whole process. Some people talked me off the edge. I decided to stay. And then a little later in the fall, we had some predations go on. They were about 8-10 miles from my house. There was probably about, I don't know, 300-400 head of mother cows between my place and where this happened. We didn't get any word out. We talked about it. Hopefully we'll work through this. But like they always told me, all it takes is one odd shit to screw up a whole bunch of attaboys, and we about did it. And so I'm begging to you guys, be honest, use integrity, tell people what's going on, because up in Northeast, we started out with a real kerthud right from the start. People weren't being open and honest. And with Francine, I think we've worked through a whole lot of these, and people are working for a common goal. But boy, it doesn't take much to knock this deal off the rails. So, you know, we've got to be open and honest with the ranchers if you expect them to be open and honest with you. So I'm just going to say that, but I want to leave you with it because we're starting into a new grazing season. So sometimes the message that you guys have to bring isn't all that nice. I thoroughly understand that, but it's certainly a lot better than leaving everybody in the dark, because there again, the trust is, we're trying to build it and get there. So it doesn't take much to knock it off the rails, and people can go into conspiracy theories really quickly, and I'm probably leading the pack. So anyway, thank you.
All right, and on that, thank you guys. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to the next round.